This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are 1 week out from the NFL kicking off its 104th season, which means this is our last Thursday without Thursday Night Football for a hot minute. And while we might not have meaningful NFL games today, we still have plenty of action week one college football to get to over the course of the next 2 hours as we welcome you in to the Lombardi Line. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, in for Michael today, the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel. Also, the last Thursday Michael will have off as he gets started with the 6 day a week banana that is football season, and you'll be having a new schedule as well, JVT.
Yes, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll have live bets Saturdays, but the more important and more exciting thing, College Lines Revealed, will be on Sunday, 10 to 12 p.m., where we look at the first week of College Lines, or the first look at the next week of College Lines. Did it last year, changing it a little bit. Last year, we only did it for an hour. This year, we'll do it for 2 hours, and I'm looking really looking forward to it. And I think I'm allowed to say this. I don't know if I get fired. Pamela Maldonado will be with me as my co-host for those shows going forward. So that'll be a lot of fun.
No, it's going to be awesome. Really excited to welcome Pam to the VSiN family officially. Same thing with Mike Somich, who's going to join us later on in the show. He's obviously done a lot of work for VSiN here in the past, but now an official full-time member joining us, professional handicapper. He'll be here in hour two today. And then coming up in about 30 minutes, VSiN contributor himself, Will Hill. Although himself, but then his Twitter handle is at not the Will Hill. So I got it, you know.
I mean, to us, he's the Will Hill, which, by the way,
he's our Will Hill.
Our new schedule kicks off this week. Pam will not be with me this week. She'll be back next week, or she'll be on next week. Will Hill be with me on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to that.
There we go. Awesome stuff. Excited to have him in just a little bit. But let's get into some of the news and notes headlines of the day, starting with several weeks apparently did mean several weeks for Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. Hard to keep Zach Taylor playing coy when his quarterback finally was out there on the practice field yesterday for the first time since July 27th when he suffered that right calf strain. Immediately saw that Bengals-Browns line for week one tick back up to Cincinnati as a 2.5-point favorite from the 1.5 that it was, total 47.5. When you saw the news, was that kind of what you anticipated? We figured that he would get out there on the practice field at some point.
Yeah, I mean, look, when there's information that is important as to what is going to transpire, you can only take the information on surface. And when the information first came out that he was hurt, the first thing was several weeks, should be back before week one of the regular season. And thus, here we are. We are before the regular season, and he's back at practice. What I'm more interested in is, we've talked about this before, Stormy, is if you go back the last 2 years and Joe Burrow, the weird thing that happened, which was, I think, the day that he referenced slow starts because of missed time in training camp, right? He gets the calf strain. But it's that the Bengals have been slow starters. Burrow, statistically, in the first two games of the regular season, has been a slow starter each of the last two seasons. So does that transpire yet again here? And especially week one against a Cleveland team that I am relatively high on, in that I bet them to win the division and think that they're going to be a pretty live team. I think that them, yeah, as part of a teaser leg, is going to be very popular and should be, you know, getting them up through three and through seven. So I'm very interested to see if that slow start transpires and, of course, what the market wants to do now here. Will they push this up to that full three? I would doubt it. I think that there's a reason why it's still sitting at 2.5. But those are like the two things that I think now come from this. We know he's back, but to what extent, and do we start to see what we saw the last 2 years?
And I am in a similar thought process with you when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. I am at least hopeful that things turn around for them, that Deshaun Watson now has had this full off season with the team, with the coaching staff, doesn't have to take that step aside. We know the talent that there is around him, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So that early season game, again, that line sitting 2.5 right now. Jamar Chase said after practice yesterday that, you know, he told Joe Burrow numerous times, don't come back if you're not ready, but he was full go, felt good out there yesterday. And when it comes to the contract side of things, obviously Joe Burrow, the next guy in line for that massive contract extension, that was another thing Zach Taylor was questioned about. Was there any thought that maybe he would sit due to contract talks before the season started? And he said no, and that's what transpired. And to your point about what Joe Burrow said when it came to wanting to get those training camp reps and the preseason reps because he had been slow starting the last couple of years, I wasn't particularly surprised that he felt that that was still going to be important for him to get out there.
Yeah, it seems that, and I, you know, we can argue about this is more of a Michael conversation, right? Like, If I was Joe Burrow, would I want like every dollar and like want to make sure that I'm okay before you go forward? Sure, but Burrow seems to be a guy that would put that, I think, second and wants to, at least from a competitive standpoint, be ready to go. So how that transpires generally, I would think even with an injury, we saw him bounce back from a torn ACL, that the guy's going to get the money that he deserves no matter what, and so maybe he thinks that, and thus let's just get ready for a season that is impending right now.
This is a Bengals team that is the favorite in that what we anticipate being a very competitive AFC North. Win total 10.5, juice -130 to the over, 11-1 shot in the Super Bowl odds. Third in the AFC, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs are the favorite, and Burrow has won the majority of those head-to-head games against the Chiefs that we know, except for a pretty important one last year in the AFC Championship. Burrow head no more, as they say. But when it comes to the top teams in the AFC, do you still feel that it's Chiefs, Bengals there at the top, or who do you see sneaking in the AFC, which we know is so competitive?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any reason why you would change your thoughts as to, you know, the top two being Cincinnati and Buffalo, or excuse me, Cincinnati. Freudian slip, and Kansas City. I think you could throw Buffalo, obviously, in that mix. And, you know, the odds would kind of represent Chiefs in their own tier, and then you get Cincinnati and Buffalo, and then you get the rest of the AFC. I think that I would put Cincinnati ahead of the Buffalo Bills just ever so slightly. So there's not like a massive gap between those two in my mind, but they're still there. So, yeah, I don't think there's really any reason to change what you thought. And it's very interesting, as we talked about, right? Kansas City for the second consecutive year, questions about what the wide receiver room is going to look like, what that offense is going to look like with a change of wide receiver. Now this is a lot more impactful because of the massive bodies, of course, that they have to switch over here. So I'm be very fascinated to see if there is any drop off. But generally, when you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes and a play caller like Andy Reid, there's not that much drop off.
Yeah, and some question marks for the Chiefs when it comes to their defense with Chris Jones still maintaining his holdout. I know that they said this week they're hopeful Chris Jones will report, but there's been no actual update to that since he said on social media that he would be willing to hold out as long as week 8. We also talked yesterday on the show about Nick Bosa and the 49ers reportedly getting close on their deal. More contract news. GM for the Dolphins, Chris Greer, said all contract talks between Chris Wilkins and Tua will be put on hold until after the season. But let's move ahead with another one of the biggest headlines of the NFL this week and for the last couple of weeks. And I hate to say this, buddy, because I know you're a Colts fan, but oh, what a mess it is in Indy right now. Jonathan Taylor, of course, not traded by the team imposed deadline on Tuesday, was placed on the physically unable to perform list to start the season, meaning he'll miss at least the first 4 games of the season. Before we get to your thoughts, let's hear from GM Chris Ballard on what he believes is a repairable relationship with their franchise running back.
It sucks. It sucks for the Colts. It sucks for Jonathan Taylor. And it sucks for our fans. It does. And it's where we're at. And we've got to work through it. And we're going to do everything we can to work through it. Relationships are repairable. They're repairable.
I mean, how could you see this coming? It does suck. They have no power in this in any way, shape, or form. There's no way that they could fix this in like 2 seconds. So you feel for Chris Ballard. You feel for Chris Ballard. It's not Jonathan Taylor's fault, to be quite honest.
You're the worst. It does suck. The situation as a whole sucks. I agree with it from that standpoint.
I'm being obviously facetious. Yes. Ballard and the eccentric owner, we'll call him, Jim Irsay.
Did he not look like Zach Wilson a little bit in that clip?
Kind
with,
of.
With the
youthful
cap.
Yeah, that's the question is, you know, like the 50 plus year old guy in the flat brim baseball fitted is, you know, kind of.
It's cool when Kyle Shanahan does it, but I'm not sure other people can do it as well. It's become his thing.
Right. I would say this, like you can sit there in front of the press and say the situation sucks. At the end of the day, you're a team that has some cap space with a rookie quarterback that you're going to build around and a very cheap backup. Like you're in a situation where you can make the guy happy, pay him what he probably wouldn't get elsewhere and still be in a flexible financial position because the guy that you drafted hopefully to be your future is in the first year of his contract. So I would think that, look, they can fix this. I think it's foolish to come out and say, oh, it sucks, man. What do you? Like, no, you could do something about it if you'd like. And the team itself is kind of odd. You know, the roster cuts, they only have, what, 4 wide receivers on the roster right now and what they're trying to do. I'm not entirely sure. But at the end of the day, like, this is kind of a situation of their own making, including Jim Irsay making comments that kind of inflamed all of this.
Yeah, it doesn't help when your owner is saying the things that he was saying. If Jonathan Taylor's out of the league and I die tomorrow, like, the league will go on, which granted is factual information.
We're all dust in the wind, Stormy.
But, geez Louise, you know, you don't need to put your running back on blast from that standpoint. But I also think that the team was probably caught a little bit off guard based on the comments that Jonathan Taylor had made earlier, even this year in April, saying that, you know, everything was all good. That wasn't going to be a concern for the time being. And then he gets a new agent, fueled by the owner that loves to talk, compounded by the general devaluation of the position that we sit at right now in the running back for the NFL. And it's just one of those things that's unfortunate all around. I feel like, will Jonathan Taylor, in your mind, play for the Colts this year?
Yeah, I still think that's the case. Like, ultimately, you know, whether Ballard wants to talk about relationships being fixed, I don't know if a relationship is fixed, but a professional relationship can be fixed if you're given what you want. And thus, if he is given a contract that he deems worthy, then yes, the relationship can get fixed and he will be an Indianapolis Colt. Now, will he respect his bosses and like them on a personal level? That probably not. But if you get what you want, then that can help solve a lot of things. I mean, look at Josh Jacobs and the Raiders, right? Yeah. Hold out, hold out, hold out. And then all of a sudden, all right, 12 mil, and then here we go. I'm back and everything's going to be fine. So, yes, professional relationships can be fixed. I would still make it a small favorite that he plays a down for Indianapolis.
It was interesting seeing all of the stuff coming out yesterday about kind of what the Colts were asking for from others. And then the teams then refuted some of those reports that had come out. But, like, they're trying to get Jalen Waddle. They're trying to get first round. We knew they were trying to get a first round pick. But, like, more than that in swaps. And it was just an interesting Twitter follow yesterday as you're kind of doing the scroll down. I need to stop calling it Twitter. I know we've been through this like time and time again, but I need to get it down. X. It is X. I did good. I did well yesterday. Okay. So that's a good start here talking NFL, but like I mentioned off the top of the show, this is the first full week, the grand kahuna of college football. And there are a number of games that are coming up tonight as we kick off week one in college football. Most notably, of course, that Utah Florida rematch from a year ago, a heartbreaker for the youths in the swamp. Now there's a lot of quarterback questions for Utah. Will Cam Rising or won't he play? The line certainly indicates one thing, but is that the reality of the situation, or has that line even maybe moved a little bit too far? We will discuss it all when we return here on the Lombardi Line. We're just getting started. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today is the day. Our updated NFL betting guide is out now. Throughout this entire NFL preseason, our VSiN experts have been reevaluating each and every team to help give you the best betting edge we can. The updated guide has picks from every on-air host. We'll get to JVT's and my own here in just a little bit. Team-specific preseason analysis. Michael Lombardi has a breakdown of every team, how to use VSiN betting splits and football contest strategies as well. Adam Burke has a great write-up there. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. You can do so for as low as $19 or save 50% off of that monthly price when you do the annual subscription. Bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Jonathan Montoble and Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on the Lombardi Line. And while we'll talk plenty of college football throughout, plenty of NFL, excuse me, throughout the course of the next 2 hours, time for a little college football talk now. Week zero was a great appetizer last week, but it's officially week one in college football. We've got 4 days of games coming up, our first fully loaded weekend, and it all kicks off with 11 games coming up today. The most notable of which certainly is that Utah-Florida matchup, and we've seen that line go all over the place, as high as 9.5, as low as 4, JVT.
Yeah, I find this pretty fascinating. So last night, or yesterday, whatever time it was, time melts together now at this point, Pete Thamel has a report that says doubtful to play, unlikely to play. And so the market now is kind of floating around 5, but you and I were talking about this. What I find kind of fascinating is, when you watch the way the markets bounced around throughout the weeks leading up to this game, it got to as low as consensus 4.5 and in some spots 4, based on nothing but thoughts that, hey, you know what, it's probably unlikely, and based on reports that he wasn't practicing. Mm-hmm. But now we have an official college football reporter saying he is doubtful to play. It's unlikely we're going to see him, and the market has kind of pumped the brakes at 5. So what I'm going to do is, look, I think we've come a little too far. I think Cameron Rising is a very good quarterback. I think he is worth, obviously, something to a point spread. But if we're going to get down to, like, the 4 range, potentially even 3.5, once we get the official news, we'll see what that's going to be. I think we're at a point now where we're a little too far in one direction. still have my questions about what Florida's going to be. If you look at Florida and what they have, especially when you talk about quarterback, right, it's a really big change to have Graham Mertz as opposed to Anthony Richardson. One of the things, if you look at Florida, the way they ran the ball last year, they had an explosive run game, and a lot of different metrics paid in a positive light. A lot of that had to do with a quarterback that can move and, of course, shed tackles and fall forward for extra yards, all sorts of things that a mobile quarterback can do. Graham Mertz, not the case. We know what Mertz is, limited as a passer. And to go on the road here in this sort of a situation and have to deal with that in terms of, right, playing an early season game out there in Utah, altitude, all sorts of things, I think the market is kind of getting a little too far in the other direction. So I'm going to bet Utah today. I just want to see what this number is going to do, how low we're going to get once the news is official. And I'm going to back the Utes, despite the fact that they're going to be on a backup quarterback.
No, I understand that thought process, too. I think that it did kind of go one way too far in the other direction. Utah is still Utah at the end of the day, which is a very, very good team. Probably should have beat Florida last year. Felt like they were the better team. And that thriller where they lost by 3 points down there in a hot, humid night game in the swamp. But Utah still has a great defense. They have a tremendous coach in Kyle Whittingham. A team that under his tutelage very rarely, I feel like, beats themselves, generally speaking. And they want that revenge, I think, in a lot of ways from last year. Beating an SEC team would mean a lot, regardless of who it is. And not to say that Billy Napier's not a great coach. I think that he is, and he proved that, of course, before he came to Florida. But 6-6 last year, you talk about Graham Mertz and what he brings, very different from what we saw with Anthony Richardson, who in that game last year had some, like, lightning in a bottle moments, right?
Could argue it's one of the reasons why he's an Indianapolis Colt.
Right.
Right? Because he was that electric that it almost solidified
him as
a really
good
prospect.
People were, like, singing Heisman hopeful about him after that game, the way that he performed, knowing how good Utah was. And Rice-Eccles Stadium has one of the more underrated home field advantages. I think it is hard to play in Salt Lake City.
No, I would agree with all of those sentiments here. So it'll be very fascinating because you always get like when it comes to injuries, especially impactful ones, you get the two moves. You get the initial move when the player in question is thrown into doubt. So, you know, we get this move where, again, for those who maybe don't remember or just checking in for college football because it's just getting started, this did open 9.5, 10. So we were there. Mm-hmm. But then we get the initial move to where we're at now, which is 5, when there is heavy doubt onto where the player's going to go, if he's going to play or not. And then you get the secondary move, which is once he's officially ruled out, and then you get another move after that. It's not going to be massive. It might be a point, maybe a point and a half, but the market does that sort of thing. So that's why if you want to be like me, I know we're going to talk to Will Hill, who's going to come up in a little bit. He's got the same play. The number is going to be available for you if you want to go out there and lay it. Just sit back and wait and see what the market does once it's officially announced that Rising's going to not play, which it seems like is going to be the case. And can I also mention really quickly, the other thing I'm tempted to is if we get a secondary move on this total, because we're starting to see the market kind of drive a lot of these totals down, right? Kent State and Central Florida down for 58.5, 54.5. UConn and NC State, 48.5 to 47, 47 to 42.5 in the Nebraska-Minnesota game, and then here, 50.5 to 44. Part of this move is because of Rising's injury. Mm-hmm. The other part is the market really kind of, I think, over-accounting for maybe some of the new clock stuff. And so if we're going to get to a point where it moves again on the total without Rising, I think it's going to be favored in the over for me tonight.
It is funny just the mind games that Kyle Whittingham and Cam Rising even are playing here. Like, he talks to media the other day and says, I feel pretty damn good. Yep. And Kyle Whittingham, not really given any update, said, I don't know if we're positive right now. I can't tell you that. There's also doubt, by the way, that tight end Brant Keithy, who missed a good portion of last year with an ACL injury himself, might not be cleared, but gave no update from that standpoint either. And speaking of mind games, I don't know if this actually was mind games or not last year, but we all remember all too well that Washington State game when everyone thought expected Cam Rising was going to come trot out onto the field, even the broadcast crew saying that he was going to run out there, and it ended up being Bryson Barnes anyways, who we expect to be the starter come later on this evening. Let's keep moving with the card tonight. Kent State at UCF, the newest member of the Big 12, a 35.5-point favorite, 7 Eastern kickoff on FS1 in Orlando. Kent State, a team that I think largely a lot of people around the country think could be the worst team in college football this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the case here. The question for this game is just how bad Kent State's going to be, right? And so the market clearly thinks that that's going to be the case, and I can't really find a way to disagree with it. This is where I think when you look at it, Stormy, this is going to be one of the things that I've tried to talk about a lot, right, when it comes to in-game wagering and live wagering. What you're looking for is potentially Kent State, you know, scripted drives, coming off, you know, getting ready for this game, potentially having having some early success and coming in then betting the other side. Because I don't really know much about either team, to be quite honest with you, and what we're going to expect. And with such a big number, and especially the way the market's moved, this opened 30, now we're up to 35.5. You're kind of behind the eight ball because it's moved so much. If you can get an early score from the Golden Flashes, then maybe you're going to be able to get in live. But I wouldn't want to come in and lay 35.5. If anything, it's take 35.5 and sit back.
From last year, lost their starting quarterback, top three rushers, lead wide receivers, four offensive linemen. Defense will be bad. Recruiting has been bad. UCF, meanwhile, a 9-5 team last season, and one that a lot of people actually like in their first season in the Big 12 this year. NC State.
It's not often you see zero next to returning starters for one side of the ball, and that's exactly what's happened defense. With Kent State. Yeah. That's terrible.
Rough. NC State, 14.5-point favorite, taking on UConn, total 47, some 46.5. Out there on CBS Sports Network, 7:30 Eastern. Jim Mora obviously leading a very improved team from 1-11 2 years ago, 6-7 last year in a bowl game. It really just did an amazing job for a program that's been bad for a number of years, an experienced roster coming back. But NC State obviously has the brand. No Devin Leary, but you do get Brendan Armstrong, who has been a really good quarterback when reunited with his current offensive coordinator at NC State. How do you evaluate this one?
So I took 14.5 with UConn. I think that UConn's going to be in a position, much like they were last year. For those who remember, UConn actually finished 9-4 against the number. They were a good ATS team last year, and it was situations like this that I think you want to go to. So I took 14.5 with the Huskies. I think I like what their quarterback situation is. Joe Fognano comes in from Maine. He has his head coach now over there as well. That's going to be the offensive coordinator for UConn. That would be Nick Charlton. So there is some continuity, right? Usually you want to see that difference. Like, okay, well, you have a new quarterback and a new system. Well, these two guys at least worked together when they were at Maine, so there should be some cohesiveness here. When it comes to implementing this offense, I think UConn's going to be a pretty live team once again. You mentioned the job that Moore did a season ago. I think they've got a solid quarterback. I think they're good enough here to take on an NC State team that only brings back three or four guys on defense. I think they're going to be able to stay within this number, and it's going to be a season that I expect at least UConn to have as last year, right? Good, solid ATS team. I don't know about the wins, but I think they're going to be good on a week-to-week basis.
It's crazy how bad they were before last year.
Yep.
2021, one win. 2020, they didn't play in that COVID season. 2019, two wins. 2018, one win. 2017, three. 2016, three. It's just for years and years and years been abysmal. So to have a 6-7 season and 17 returning starters expecting to build on that, I think is a nice feather in the cap for Jim Mora and that UConn crew. Plus, I also think, I don't know if this is anything that would come into your thought process because it is week one, and obviously you're so excited just to play anybody else, but NC State does have Notre Dame coming up
week two
as well. Like, hard to not have your focus in that spot.
Well, I think so. One of the things in college that I've come around a lot more to over the last few years has been those types of situations. Situational handicapping in college football, I think, is much more impactful, much more important, a part of the process. And for a team like NC State that has a big opponent coming up in Notre Dame, those are the kind of spots that you're looking at and circling for some of these teams when you're talking about it. So, no, I don't think that's foolish to think that is part of the process here. I get it's opening game like you're talking about and going on the road, but it's hard not to look past what has been a very moribund program for a very long time to get ready for what's going to be Notre Dame.
UConn feels like a live dog in this opening weekend spot. We didn't get to Nebraska at Minnesota, but we will a little bit later on in the show. For now, we're going to step aside, but when we return, VSiN contributor Will Hill, little career update for him, new show he's going to be a part of here soon, as well as some of his best plays of the day and weekend. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever even place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sportsbook app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa, a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere, also works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSIN. That's g.bank/VSIN. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line, Stormy Bonatoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you. We welcome in VSIN contributor Will Hill at not the Will Hill on X. And super excited to have you, buddy, and excited for your new opportunity as part of the Bear Bets new podcast with Chris the Bear Felico. What can you tell us about it?
What's going on? First of all, I should be billing both of you because I was privy to your conversation off the air, both of you just spilling your heart. So I felt like I was playing psychologist. But I'm excited. This is going to be fun, this podcast with Chris Felica, Jeff Schwartz, and then I'm going to be part of a little roundtable with those guys and Sammy P, where we just go back and forth, you know, lines, futures, whatever the case may be. Our first episode we recorded last night, so it is out. It is up. It's ready to go. So it's a lot of fun, and I'm excited.
Yeah, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts, as the kids like to say these days.
We'll open up with an apology. Will, I saw your post on X. I am not Michael Lombardi, so I apologize. It is me, my friend. You'll have to stick with me. All right, let's go to a game that I was actually just talking with Stormy about. You and I think are on the same lines here. Utah, Florida. Walk us through the process. I'm in on Utah. I'm just waiting to see what the market does once it's official that Rising is going to be out. We'll see if that's going to be the case. Pete Thamel had the report. What are you doing here?
I'm curious what you think in terms of where the line's going to go, because I took a bunch of 6.5 and 7 with Florida. I might have even got 7.5 last week, but I'm back. Like, the side I like right now is Utah, and I'm going to hopefully, hey, we get this thing by 6 or 7. I'd be a very happy guy. I think the lowest I saw it got was 4, and then 4.5, and it ticked back up to 5. So I don't know that we're going to get that 3, 3.5. So I bought back on Utah. I think that Utah is the right side at this number. If there's any team that's capable of withstanding a loss at quarterback, it's Utah, just because they're built inside out. Mm-hmm. Both sides of the line are really good. You know, they're going to run the ball. They're going to play good defense. That building is going to be insane tonight. I mean, that's always a tough place to win, especially first game of the season, prime time. You got an SEC team there. This is going to be a fun game. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. So let's hopefully get Utah by a touchdown or so, maybe with a missed extra point. They win by 6. But I do think Utah is the right side. Graham Mertz is involved. Like, I think that needs to be mentioned here. Graham Mertz is involved. He is just not good. So I'm sure there will be some sentiment, you know, people that just look at this and maybe aren't following college football that closely, or, you know, not that in tune with the rosters or whatever, just say, oh, this team doesn't have his quarterback. This team is I got the SEC team. I'm getting points, and they're going to look to Florida. But I think Utah gets them tonight, hopefully by 7.
Yeah, and you mentioned really quick, I would assume we get to 4 at the very least. The faraway places have 4.5 already, and, you know, you get that secondary move once it's officially announced. So I'm hoping I get to lay 4 here with Utah.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, if we'll get an official announcement, because Utah, everyone that covers the team, Stormy, maybe you know about this, Whittingham is very close to the vest. I remember a podcast I was listening to where, like, they said a couple years ago they wouldn't even tell the production crew who was playing quarterback. And they basically, everybody found out when the guy took the field. So who knows if we actually get that announcement, because even though we know he's not playing, it's funny how the betting market works. And you alluded to it, JVT, like, we'll know he's not playing, but once he's officially out, you get that second wave of, like, oh, he's not playing, I got to bet against him. Like, that's already well baked into the number. Like, this was 10 during the summer. It was assumed he at least wasn't going to be 100% or wasn't going to play. I feel like sometimes it's a couple moves too much.
So follow up, last one on this. I was also playing around with the idea of betting this thing over if we get another move, because this thing opened 50.5. We're down to 44. If this gets to like 42.5, I think this is kind of worth playing, because you get the impact of the injury, and I think the market kind of overreacting to 4-3 to the under in week 0, which I guess is something worth playing on.
Yeah, I'm not looking to play a lot of overs, but I'm some of these are moving, and we'll get to one of them. Some of these are moving to the point where, man, you got to think about just playing back. And if you got good numbers, you can. You got nice little middles on key numbers, but all these unders just keep ticking down. And look, the clock affects it. I'm looking to play unders, if anything, but you get to a certain point, like, it's still a college football game. Getting to 42 or 43 in a college football game is not that hard. You're going to stumble into some points one way or another. So I agree with you. I don't think there's any value left on the under. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, Will, and to your earlier point about how close to the vest Kyle Whittingham has played some of these things, we talked a little bit earlier in the show about that game against Washington State last year, where I always say, that's when you need a sideline reporter, okay? Nobody knew what was going on. They didn't have a sideline reporter that day. Couldn't get any information. I do have value. Little things. Although, like,
I mean, you're a good sideline reporter. I don't think you would have gotten it out of Whittingham. Unless you were going to tie him down, like, you know what I mean? Like in 21, where they get the guy for card counting, and so they tie him up, and he get the knuckles, and he just start bashing his ribs in. I think that's how you get Kyle Whittingham to give you information.
Usually when you are down there, though, because when these things tend to happen, they do give the SID the heads up. They might not tell media, they might not tell broadcast, but they'll tell their SID or somebody that's out there on the sideline that you can say, hey, what's up? And they will share at least a piece of information that you can give. So there's that
look up Utah's
element
ID.
Of it. Paul Kirk. Used to be at Colorado State, Mountain West. But no, so that was just one of those things. And interestingly enough, like there's so many coaches like that where even before the game, when you're down there on the sideline and you're like, hey, any updates? What's going on? They don't tell you a dang thing and they wait until kickoff and then you have to learn it that way. It's a real pain in the neck. Neither here nor there. Let's get to this Nebraska-Minnesota game because we didn't get to touch on this one before. I know you have a play on the total, but a lot of people taking that 7 with the Cornhuskers, belief in Matt Rhule taking over the program. We know what he's done with Temple. We know what he did with Baylor, turning around that program in a year. But does it get started off with a bang here in this season opener against Minnesota? How are you looking at this one?
Yeah, I don't have a play on the side. Usually it takes Rhule a year wherever he's gone. It's that first year is there's some growing pains. The second year is the leap year. So I understand like the optimism of Rhule going forward. I just don't know if we're going to see it in week one. I think there's 42.5 now at DraftKings. This is all the way down. I think it was 47, 48, not that long ago. It was at least 46.5 like a few days ago, and even 45 like maybe 2 days ago. So this is just it's like a punt that continues to roll and roll. Like eventually I'm going to down the punt and play the over here. I think 42.5 is just too low. Again, like it's just hard to not score 43 points in a college football game. I understand the new clock rules, but to me, Minnesota, I think, reading between the lines with some of their comments from camp, they're going to shift their philosophy on offense a little bit. They've been such a run-heavy team. I think they were 70% rush rate last year, where they're basically like a service academy the way they ran the ball constantly. So I think they're going to be more of a pass-heavy team. The quarterback's not a bad player. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. Stormy, you're a pro. You probably got it in JVT. You probably could too. I think they'll be better at quarterback, and they lost a lot on defense. They really lost a lot in the secondary. So to me, just in general, they profile as an over team. I know there's some wins you have to worry about, but who knows? Maybe that helps you a little bit. You get a turnover, a pick six early, something like that. Defense can help an under too if you get a turnover in the right spot. So I will go over here. I just think this is too much of a movement.
All right, I like it.
Is it Callie McManus? How do you say it? Do you know?
I think that.
Ethan?
There you go.
I think.
I'll trust
the Minnesota
you.
Quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's how you say it. But
that's just where we need Lombardi for the pronunciation.
I have UMass at Auburn this week. I've been way too focused on Pumachan. Okay, so that's a new name for me this week. But it's the little things.
Okay. With that, let's go to Friday. Chips on the road taking on Michigan State. This number is what, 14 now across the board. Total of 45. This is another total that's moving. What do you make of this one?
I like the dog here. I like the 14.5, or the 14.5's all gone. I don't want to give out a stale number. I looked like an hour ago, and there was a 14.5, I think, at least still at DraftKings. I wouldn't be surprised if we close at 14 here. To me, it's a couple things. It's a fade of Michigan State. I think they have issues all over the field. $95 million does not get you what it used to in terms of the coach. This program has gone south since they gave him that money. I played their underseason win total. Michigan State for me is a fade. And I just think Central Michigan was a little unlucky with turnovers last year. I mean, minus 18 overall. There was not one game where they were positive in turnovers. Some bad fumble luck. McElwain's one of the better coaches, at least for this level. He usually doesn't have two bad years in a row. So I could see an ugly, tight game. This is a lower total at 45.5. So those points are extra valuable in a game where you don't expect a lot of scoring. So I will take the Chippewas here, plus the 14.5. Try and find a 14.5, obviously.
The game of the week in college football, we have to wait until Sunday for, but Florida State and LSU going head-to-head. It appears we are on opposite sides of this one. I bet LSU -2 earlier this morning. You were able to get a 3 on Florida State. What do you like about the Seminoles?
We could both win. LSU could win by 2.5, and then we're both happy. I just like the 3. I like the number here. There's a 3 there out there at a legal book here in Connecticut. I could tweet it out here in a minute. I just think I love the coach in Norvell. The 207 combined starts for the offensive line, so it's a very good, very experienced offensive line. A good play caller with Norvell, one of the Heisman short shots in with the quarterback here, Jordan Travis. This is going to be a fun game. I can't wait. I think this is, you know, sort of like last year, last team with the ball, close game. That 3 is super valuable. So and maybe I'll buy back with a little bit of, if I can find a cheap money line on LSU and middle it. But to me, that 3, if you can find it, and there's one out there, is a good bet.
Came down to a missed extra point last year for Florida State to get that dub. Thanks, Will. You're awesome.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
That's our guy, Will Hill. Follow Matt, not the Will Hill, on X and on the new episode of Bear Bets that dropped earlier today, branching off from Fox Big Noon Kickoff with Chris the Bear Felica. We are going to step aside. We'll get back to some NFL talk when we return. Our favorite bets that we have put down pen to paper, got them in the bet slip for this NFL future season.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Now, when you do this, you will also get our new and improved updated betting guide. We had a betting guide for the NFL that came out earlier this summer, but now that we have some preseason stuff, injury updates, all of those things, that's incorporated in this updated version, as well as like best bets from each and every host and analyst here at the network. So I know what my favorite one is, what I wrote down. What did you put in the guide?
New England Patriots to make the playoffs. I love this team. I think I'm a Patriots fan.
Music
now.
To Lombardi's ears.
That's right. Maybe spending all those time, that time up in Atlantic City is really what changed me, converting me to be a Patriots guy. No, I think when you talk about a team being undervalued by the betting market, and again, value is, you know, to the eye of the beholder, however you make these numbers, whatever it is. But I think when you're talking about, if I were to tell you that a team that last year finished 8-9 with the second best defense in the National Football League, whose only real question was its offense, who then shipped off a defensive coordinator who was calling plays and brought in a real NFL offensive coordinator to get the most out of a quarterback who in his first year led this team to 10 wins. I think we're kind of sleeping on how good New England can be, especially when you're looking at things like their win total, like their odds to make the playoffs. And I get a lot of it has to do with what division they're in, but I think that New England is much closer to the teams in the division than the market would account for at this point right now. And especially if you're going to get an above average offensive effort from New England, and all of a sudden this defense starts to become, again, they were second best in EPA. They were top five defense, like so many different metrics. Mm-hmm. They were top five defense. If that comes back, which I think it is, because mm-hmm. Belichick has proven he's going to do that consistently, and you get, again, above average play from this offense, this is going to be a team that I think can make it into the postseason, and at the very least has better odds of making it into the postseason than the market would indicate. So Patriots make the playoffs, plus 245.
Yeah, that defense is going to be solid once again. And this was a team that coming into the season, I liked their win total over for a lot of those same reasons. I don't think that you can state enough how big of a difference it's going to make for an offense and for a quarterback to have a real offensive coordinator. Like, that's what happened last year. I get that we talk a lot about Bill Belichick being one of the greatest of all time when it comes to the coaching position, but that was a head scratcher from top to bottom. And if it would have worked out, then hey, more power to you and the witchcraft and wizardry that was out there. But that played out exactly like everyone, it seemed, except Bill Belichick thought mm-hmm. it would.
And really quietly, Mac Jones actually showed improvement as the season went along. If you go from week 12 on, he graded out above average by PFF standards. He stopped committing as many turnover-worthy plays. And still, and that's one of the biggest assets for Mac Jones, he's not a guy who commits a bunch of turnover-worthy plays. Last year, turnover-worthy play rate of 2.7%. It was 2.5 in his rookie year. And what kind of you're alluding to, Stormy, which I love the most, is, you know, we have two sample sizes. We have two seasons of Mac Jones. We have one in which he was an above-average quarterback that led a team to the playoffs, and we have another one in which he was below average and his team had a losing record, was one away from going, you know, having a winning record, though, 8-9. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the collective, we are like, nah, that second season's the real one, where he had a buffoon calling his plays and putting him, right? Like, that's yeah. the legitimate version of Mac Jones, and I just don't understand why that would be the case. So I think, you know, you sound like you're kind of lock and set with me. At least you bet it over the win total. I'm betting this team did not only go over the win total, but make it to the playoffs, and that's my favorite bet that I use for the guide.
What was your first thought when you saw Bailey Zappe and Malik Cunningham released? We know obviously they ended up good. Still signing on the practice squad, but I think that was another one of those things you're like, okay, so we got you, Mac.
Right. Well, so here's the thing, and I think you've come to know me a little bit more as we've done some of these shows, and like, some things just really make, like, grind my gears to the point where I'm just like, can we not have stupid conversations? And so one of the stupid conversations during the preseason was like, Mac Jones better watch out. Bailey Zappe. Emily Cunningham. He could lose his job. No, like, that's not going to be the case. Like, there's this weird narrative that was spun out there that him and Belichick didn't see eye to eye. Stormy, if Bill Adie came in here and said that you've got to do a show, but you got to do it blindfolded and you're not going to have a rundown, Like, you're going to...
You're setting someone up for failure.
Right. And then afterwards, you start getting arguments with Bill, and everyone at the network's like, you know, Stormy's not really being a team player. Like, no, Bill's screwing you over. And it's the same thing here, except a different Bill. Bill Belichick screwed Mac Jones over with a terrible coaching staff around that offense. I think this is going to be much better.
And he actually credit Mac Jones, too, for the way that he's talked publicly this training camp and offseason, saying that, like, he put a lot of that on him and that he wants to re-earn the trust of the guys around him. He's working on his attitude. Like, he, even though he was put in such a tough position, I think has still handled it really, really well, at least publicly. My bet that I put in the guide, and again, we're giving you ours, but there's a ton of these that cover a bunch of different angles, whether it be season win totals to make or miss the playoffs, player props, different ways that you can attack this preseason from a number of angles and markets. But what I went with was the Vikings over the 8.5 win total. I know a lot of people, rightfully so, anticipate regression from a team that won 13 games a year ago and had just an unprecedented number of wins in one score games and the point differential. We know all of the things, right? But I think 5 games is just too many to regress in this spot, given the talent that they have, given the defensive coordinator that they've brought in Brian Flores. I know our guy Michael, I even wrote this in the guide, I'm pretty sure. Michael loves to joke that they can't let Kevin O'Connell into a casino because of how lucky that guy was a year ago. And I do believe that, like, luck, there is a luck factor when you win that many games that come down to the wire. But there's also a little bit of a skill factor that in clutch time, they were able to rise their level of play. And I like Kirk Cousins. A lot of people like to hate on this guy and, oh, bet against primetime Kirk, all these things. But
Margaret Thatcher.
But I think that he's got a lot more to give than people give him credit for.
I agree with you. And because here's the most important point, the most important point that you made. 8.5 and going over that, and if they go 9-8, 10-7, that is regression. That's regression from a team that won 13 games last season. So I think that we're, like, as a whole, we're kind of missing the point of, like, yes, they can regress, but also still win a division at 9-8 or 10-7 and just not have the wins that they did last season. And there's a reality in which, yes, they regress again, but the defense, which was, I think, one of the biggest culprits for a lot of what we saw last year, gets better this season. So,
well, it couldn't get worse.
Okay, well, that's
in, they were, I guess technically they could 31 of 32 in total defense.
But I think that's, like, the most important point here is, like, the offense is still going to be good. Like, last year, the offense was good. It's just the defense that allowed them to still win 13 games and also have a negative point differential. So if your offense gives you the same baseline of production, your defense gets better, you're still talking about a team that can win 9, 10 games in what I think is a pretty, not poor division, but not one that's very, that's insanely strong.
Not like a division of world beaters by any means.
So I agree with your, I would agree with your thought process here. Like, the Vikings are, I've gone pro Vikings almost every single year. Last year, I finally got an NFC North to get home, even though I think I bet it like 4 years in a row. But this year, I've been attacking the NFC North in a similar fashion, which is just that I think there's a flawed favorite at the top, and I think betting some of these other teams, specifically the Vikings and or the Packers, to have positive years is the way to do it.
And you look at some of those games on their schedule, too, against the NFC South that are teams with question marks, with young quarterbacks, teams that have new quarterbacks, offensive question marks like the Raiders later on in the season. Like, there's just... there's a lot of opportunity, I think, on this schedule for a team that even if and when they regress, like, I am in agreement with that, that it's going to be really, really hard for them to have double-digit wins. But I don't need double-digit wins. Mm-hmm. I don't need them to win this division. I don't need them to, you know, that's not what this bet is.
9-8 or better.
Exactly. So that's all I'm asking for, and I think that the Vikings can get it done. Where do you see them fitting in that division as a whole this year? Do you have a feel for it?
Oh, I think they're definitely going to, like, they have a shot to finish within the top two, win it. I mean, I bet the Packers to win the division only because I think the odds are too low on them to win that thing, right?
I agree
think
with
there's
that,
value in that, and so thus I bet it.
Which we did start to see a move, by the way, because they were either a longer shot or right there with the Bears, and that's come down a little bit.
It's insane to me to think that the Bears have a better shot at winning this
division. As we pull up the DraftKings odds, and they're back to the longest shot again.
It's, again, like, I just, if you were to tell me the Bears have a better chance of winning this division, I just don't understand that thought. But to your point, like, no, I think there is I think the favorite is flawed. I think that the Bears are flawed in terms of their probabilities of winning the division. Thus, there's value elsewhere in this division, whether it's the Packers at 4-1, which is how I judge it, or the Vikings at +290. I think either one is perfectly plausible in terms of saying I see value in these. But no, I think that they're one of the top two teams in the division. I don't think there's any question.
And something, just going back to the point of the Bears here, something I've said a number of times that I'm curious your opinion on is everybody anticipates Justin Fields to make this massive leap, like a Jalen Hurts-esque leap, without understanding that what Jalen Hurts did was extraordinarily unique, and that does not happen often. And the things that he fixed do not typically get fixed. Like, he was the exception to the rule, not the rule. And they think that Justin Fields is just going to step in and be that guy. It's a lot to ask on a young player.
It's a lot to ask, and here's the thing. Jalen Hurts, where he started to where he went his second year to his third year, there was a natural progression. For Justin Fields, it was, as a passer, his rookie year, actually took a small step back as a passer his second year. Now you're asking for the phenomenal leap up to MVP level. Like, yeah. I don't really understand that thought process.
Three wins a year ago, I think if they get seven, or if they were able to go over that win total at eight, that would be a massive win for this team and a jump in the right direction. But it's a lot to put on the shoulders of this young guy in Justin Fields. We're going to step aside. More NFL talk when we return for hour two. Jonathan Von Model is back.